Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Lisa Mullins. When you think of country music today, most often images of Texas 10-gallon hats and cowboy boots come to mind, along with a nice southern twang, say the kind of twang you hear on Tim McGraw's Shotgun Rider, the top song on the Billboard's Hot Country chart.
No other shotgun rider beside me, singing to the radio.
Maybe here in New England, when we talk about country music, we should instead think of the woods of Maine and a singer with an eye patch.
I'm dreaming today of a home far away, back where the sun always shines.
That's Mainer Dick Curless singing his 1956 tune Cottage in the Pines about the soft winds of rural Maine. Author Clifford Murphy argues that New England has a rich history of country and western music that's rooted in many different ethnic groups. He writes about that unique New England country sound and why it's changed over the years in his new book called Yankee Twang, Country and Western Music in New England. Cliff is a New Hampshire native, and he joins us from Baltimore, where he oversees Maryland's Folklife program. So, Cliff, there is a quote in your book, New England country and western has been buried under a mountain of corporate propaganda that wants you to believe that country music is an exclusively southern export. Isn't it?
It is definitely not. You know, as someone who grew up in New Hampshire, I really grew up with this very strong sense that culture came from someplace else. It seemed like any of the musical groups that had any sort of cultural cachet came from someplace else. And I was in an alternative country rock band called Say Zuzu, and we really worked hard to talk to older generations of musicians to understand who else was playing music before us. And Dick Curless is really a good place to start. He's where I started as a music fan. I heard his last recording that he made. It came out in 95 on Rounder Records, and I thought, who is this guy? You know, I loved the record.
I knew you couldn't win. I told you from the start. Go on, you break crazy heart.
Dick Curless was born in Aroostook County, Maine. And he really became New England's great national success story. He sounded like he was from Maine. You know, to see him on the cover with a fringe jacket and a cowboy hat and the eye patch, I just thought, what is this? Who is this? Why don't I know about this guy? I would really put him in the top five greatest country singers of all time.
All you big and burly men who roll the trucks along, better listen, you'll be thankful when you hear my song. You have really got it made if you're hauling goods any place on earth but those Haynesville woods.
What aspect of this sound is New England? You know, speaks of New England rather than Nashville.
Well, aside from the lyrics, you know, which is explicitly about Maine and really driving potatoes from northern Maine to Boston, it's the vocals, it's the vocal approach, it's the accent where he says in the song, count them all.
Count them all. There'd be a tombstone every mile.
You spent a long time, about 10 years, piecing together this book through a lot of interviews, a lot of research, and you unearth many musicians that many of us haven't heard before, and many eras, in fact, as well. There was the barnstorming of New England. Describe what that was, and one of the most prominent figures in the barnstorming era.
From the 1920s through the 1950s, really, there was a period that I consider the barnstorming era in New England, which meant that as a country singer, somebody like Georgia May, who was from Massachusetts.
From Dedham, Massachusetts.
From Dedham, Mass.
Yodeling cowgirl.
Yes. Somebody like Georgia May would wind up getting a radio show, usually starting out on a small wattage radio station, AM radio, and eventually moving up, if they were successful, moving up to really the big AM radio stations of that time.
Because I love my hills above New England.
getting back to your question about barnstorming, you know, you work on the radio station, you get all this fan mail, and so you make your real money playing shows at night. So you drive anywhere that you can drive from your radio station home base, where you can do a performance at night and get back in time to do your radio program in the morning. This is how things work for country musicians in New England, really 6 days a week. They made a very good living doing this.
What period is this?
This would have been the 20s through the, I guess, about the mid-1950s.
So what happened to change that and change the fortunes of people like Georgia May?
Well, television really was the big thing. And so once television comes in, advertising money starts, you know, being lost to radio stations and going into television. What happens is that in order to cut down on overhead, radio stations begin eliminating live music and replacing them with DJs and records. At this point, local music making, not just in New England, gets displaced. And really, very rapidly, people begin to lose a sense that music is something that is local.
While that was happening in radio, fewer local artists were being played. Is it safe to say that there were still live venues around the Boston area where you could hear this kind of music?
Yes, and there still are. Boston was this important hub for country music making. I mean, I think that, you know, in the mid-1950s, there was a program called the Hayloft Jamboree, which was a live radio barn dance where all of the major figures, at least in southern New England, came to perform weekly on the Hayloft Jamboree. And they performed live. They did this show live at Symphony Hall, which is, it's not the setting that you would imagine seeing, you know, people playing country music in.
Give us an example of what went on at Symphony Hall.
At Symphony Hall with the Hayloft Jamboree, you would have, I would say, six or seven different regional acts. So people like Eddie Zack and his Dude Ranchers, who were an Armenian-American country band from Providence, Rhode Island.
When you dance the Rhode Island poker, you and your girl dance together.
You would have the Lane Brothers, who were an Italian-American country duo from Cambridge.
You can't flip your hip, you can't feel the beat. You gotta move more and more than your feet. You once did the bop and wiggled a lot, but in that smock you've got no rock. But you can't do the bop in the sack.
And they would be flanked by comics, and then they would sometimes bring in one major name from outside of the area. So somebody like Hawkshaw Hawkins or Hank Thompson from Texas. And there was a lot of camaraderie between the national and local musicians at that time.
You know, we're hearing these names, Eddie Zack and his Dude Ranchers and Georgia May. And these are names that are not New England names. And you mentioned some of the so-called ethnic-sounding names, first-generation mm-hmm. immigrants to New England. They made their name in country and Western music in New England, but they changed their name.
When I began this journey, one of the things that I had expected to find was that somewhere, or I hoped to find, I should say, was that out there would be this world of singers like Dick Curlis who were singing about local events, right, like trucking in Maine. And what I kept coming up against initially was cowboy singer after cowboy singer after cowboy singer. And what I discovered was that all of these, not all of them, but a significant majority of the cowboy groups that were popular in the area from the 20s through the 50s were first-generation Americans from Italian, Greek, Polish, German, French-Canadian families. And that many of them had changed their names, and when they would play live shows and when I started interviewing these people, they would talk to me about what the repertoire was. And so they would, you know, they would do Neapolitan pop songs from Italy.
Ue Marie, Ue Marie, quando sonna tu faccia le te.
It was interesting to me, after hearing story after story of this, how people of that generation constructed a new American identity that was that on the very surface seems as though they have, you know, quote unquote, Americanized themselves, But in the reality of the social event, you know, when you look at the repertoire, they were this generation of people with one foot firmly planted in both worlds.
During the Vietnam era, there is a singer from Maine, Wendell Austin, who inserted contemporary issues, a different kind of contemporary issue, in his music. In this ballad, he sings of a guy who murders his wife while he's on LSD. He ends up at Walpole Prison.
I started using LSD. It gave me quite a kick. Better than booze and easy to use, but it made me mentally sick.
One of the things that you can hear is that he's singing with a little bit of a southern twang, right? So Wendell is a guy who grew up in the Haynesville woods where that Dick Curlis song was written about in Maine. And, you know, he came of age at a time where you know, the country music that was on the radio was starting to be more and more and more and more southern.
You talk, Cliff, about how there's so much less of this music right now, but at the same time, we could hear it. I mean, we can go out on a particular night of the week and still hear this kind of music around the Boston area.
My favorite group, who I think that BUR listeners could go see anytime that they wanted to, or most weekends, would be the Country Masters, who play at the Canadian American Club in Watertown, Massachusetts. They will sing in French and English. They play a lot of the old material. They play contemporary stuff done in their own style. So in this what I think of as a traditional New England style.
Sur le bord de la place Saint-Pierre, un petit verre, une prière, c'est tout ce qu'on avait besoin.
Cliff Murphy is author of the book Yankee Twang, Country and Western Music in New England. The New Hampshire native is the director of Maryland Traditions. That's the state's folklife program. Cliff, so nice to talk to you. Thanks.
It's great to be here.
We're going to end with a little bit of Cliff Murphy's own music. Here's the Say Zuzu song, Wastin' Time.
Well, I pray they bring me in a big clay jar.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Lisa Mullins. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.